Morning, everybody. Welcome to Friends Church. It's a full one today, isn't it? We've got people in the balcony today. For you guys in the very back row, sound is crap back there. I apologize. You know, every couple weeks we do what we call an FAQ, which is we just talk about stuff of why we do what we do at Friends Church. Because Friends Church isn't this. Friends Church is all of us. And so we kind of all need to be on the same page, right? And so a couple weeks ago, I did one on, I talked about giving. Average church gives about 3% of their budget out the doors of their church. Everything else is used for them. Last year, we gave the equivalent of 23% of our operating budget out the door. Yeah. And I was all excited and, you know, pumped about it. And someone came after me and they're like, "You did what?" Kind of this moment where I'm like, "What do you mean? I thought I was pretty clear about this." But see, I always assume you guys are sitting inside my head, understanding what I'm trying to say, not what I actually say. So they said, "Well, is what you're saying that when I donate money into the black box, when we put our money in there, Friends Church, whoever that is, took 23% and sent it out?" I was like, no, that's not how it works. Whatever you give in the black box or in general, whatever we give that way stays in Friends Church. That's what makes this happen. That's what makes the sermon happen. That's what gives you guys seats to sit on, coffee, crackers for the kids, Slurpees for the teens. That stays here. But there's another part that flows through Friends Church. So if a kid's outside who's going to Mexico comes to you and says, "Would you support my trip? We're going to go to Mexico. We're going to build houses for people who've never even had a locked door in their lives. Would you help us?" And you go online and you donate to that person. That money comes through Friends Church and goes out the door. When you give to somebody, and this happened in Calgary, whose loved one died and they didn't have enough to have a funeral. Like a loss in a family isn't bad enough. Now you can't even afford a funeral. And so when we donate to that, that money comes through Friends Church and goes out the door and pays for a funeral. We have tons of things that you guys, whenever we donate something outside of general, it flows through Friends Church. And so when I say 23% of the equivalent of 23% of our operating budget goes out the door, that's what you guys have said, "This is where I want the money to go." So it's not stealing from general to send out the door. It's not the board saying, "Hey, what the heck? Let's just send that money out the door." That's not what's going on. This is what you guys say, "This is where I want my financial water to go." That makes it even more exciting, isn't it? That 23% is what we all gave out the door. Now, just to remind you, whatever you put into general, so in the black box, in the envelope, if it's marked general, online, stays at Friends Church. And we wouldn't give it away right now because things are a little bit tight. Right now, our general's a little behind where we'd like it to be. And we'll talk about that over the next couple weeks. But 23% of the money, you guys said, "Hey, we want this to go out the door." That's incredible. So on behalf of all the people you guys helped, thank you. Now what we learn from this thing is when we do FAQs, you guys often ask us questions after because we assume you know what we know, right? You spend all your time reading dense theology books, don't you? So I can just like reference page 13 and you all know what I'm talking about. So if we say something like that, send us an email. You know, ask us a question. If you don't know why we do something, we think long and hard about why we do things. Ask us a question. If we say something, you're not sure how it works, send us a question or send us an email. My email is vince@friendchurch.ca. So last thing I want to end with is this. First, thank you. I was running yesterday listening to a podcast by a guy named Mark Hamilton out of UBC. He gave a whole bunch of people $20 and said, "Hey, go spend this." Half of them he said, "Go spend it on yourself." Half of them he said, "Go spend it on somebody else." And he measured their happiness before he did it and their happiness after they did it. $20, this group, spend it on yourself. This group, spend it on someone else. Happiness stayed the same over here. The only way you can spend money and create happiness, according to this guy, is by giving it away. And you guys gave away a tremendous amount of money. So not only do you help some people, I hope you got a little happiness out of it too.
Good day, right there, huh? I don't know. I saw that clip. Jody showed me this week. I went, okay, man. I've never experienced the kind of day where things just break out into a massive flash mob dance, but I've had days where I felt as good as that guy. Hey, how about you? Huh? A good day. We've all had, oh, every day. Nice. I can't say that. But I've had days. Hey? I remember the day when Kathy and I moved out of an apartment into a townhouse in Silver Springs up in the Northwest. I know that to you, that might not sound like any big deal. To me, this was the most incredible day. You see, because we at the time were living in an apartment, stuffy apartment right near the university. It was brutal, okay? We lived on the top floor, so three floors. There was a laundry there on the building that never worked, so we were using a laundromat most days. We were working crazy hours, so you couldn't just sit there and wait for your laundry to go. We were going back and forth. Do you know how many towels I had ripped off out of that frickin' laundry? It was brutal. Three stairs. The elevator rarely worked and was way down the hallway on one end, so we were hoofing it. Three stairs, back and forth. Which, you know what? You say, oh yeah, well, Jeff, you need the exercise. True. You carry four trips of grocery bags up and down those stairs. Brutal. We had full sun on one side, so the sun was beating in. So we'd come home to the sauna every night, trying to sleep in that. So the day came when we moved into this avocado-colored townhome. Oh, yeah. Man, I'm telling you, we had parking stall right outside our door. Like, we're talking parking stall, steps, front door. I could look at my car and keep it from being broken in right there. We had a plug-in right there that actually worked for our car. Huh? I walked into three bedrooms. Baby, we were living the dream. Our own washer and dryer. I remember mornings where I'd just get up and just walk through the bedrooms. They're empty, but I would still walk through them. I'd just like, I wanted to walk out onto the street. The first night I was there and just kind of announce to the world, I am the king of the world. That's my place right there. It's hard to imagine. I have not had that feeling since, but that day of moving into this place was one of the greatest memories I have of my world changing. I know I live a pretty simple life. That was unbelievable. And you look and you laugh, and yet I'm betting you know the feeling. You know the feeling of when it's just like life couldn't be better. Don't you? Sure you do. Like when you got the job, that job that you were just hoping for, you did the interview and you're just like, and then you get the call back. Or you're looking for that promotion and you know there's a few other people that could get it and you got it. And you walked into the office and said, or you landed the deal, huh? Praying that they would say yes to you and not the competitors, and they gave you it. Maybe it was when you walked the floor of your graduating class knowing you wouldn't be studying next weekend. And just like, oh yeah. How about when that friendship that had been on the rocks for a long time kind of got fixed up? And all of a sudden that friend called you. That call you hadn't heard in a long time, and it's like things are well. What about the day when you walked down the aisle and said yes to that person? Said, baby, we're married. Or what about the day when you walked into the doors of your house with your first baby going, man, we're doing this. What do we do now? What about the day when you said, I no longer need diapers for my kid? Oh, I remember that day. Huh? Oh. I can think about all these different men. You know this feeling. You have felt this. What about the day for some of you when that addiction that had you for so long by the throat started loosening and you could feel yourself regaining control? And all of a sudden the clarity of mind, the ability to get up and not have to say yes to whatever that thing was, And you felt yourself getting your life back. Oh, I could go on and on. You know the feeling. We've all felt it. Those moments when, for whatever reason, life was just sweet. Whatever it was, it triggered one of those happy dances. Where it was just like... What should you do in those moments? What should you do in those moments? That's what I want to talk about this morning. In ancient Israel, there were moments like these that would break out. And when they did, people would engage in this ritual. When people had this overwhelming sense of feeling blessed, when life was good, when all of a sudden they'd just go, man, I feel good. I feel lucky. Things are going right. They would engage in a ritual known as the well-being offering. They would bring an unblemished animal. Likely it was a goat or a lamb. And it didn't matter whether it was a male or female in this particular ritual, but they would bring it to the sacred tent where the priest was. And they would offer this animal up. And the priest would take it and they would slaughter it right there. Sorry. And they would drain the blood. And they would remove... This just went from a real party to... But they would drain the animal. And then they would remove the fat. And then they would prepare. They'd cook this animal. And unlike all the other rituals, they would look at the person who brought the animal. And they'd take that prepared animal that had been all cooked up. And they'd pass it back to that person. And that person in this time, different than all the other rituals, some rituals, the whole animal would be consumed by fire. Some, the priest would take a lot. There'd be nothing left. But this one was handed back to that person. And that person had 2 days to consume that animal. Is right. Can you imagine bringing a lamb in and all of a sudden that thing being handed back and saying, okay, buddy, you got 48 hours. It's like going shopping at Costco for meat. You know, you want to do up a nice rib roast, but man, those suckers come out like this in those packages, right? You know there's way more than your family's going to be able to pound down, right? That's why with this specific well-being offering, there was almost implied understanding that you and your nuclear family were not the only ones that were going to be eating that lamb or that goat. You were inviting others to the party. Because there's way more than you were ever going to be able to eat. When you were bringing in the well-being offering, let me tell you something. There was a few invites going out. You're coming. Hey, what are you guys up to? Come on over. We got lots left. Hey, pull up a chair. Come on, boys. Bring your appetite. That was implied in this ritual. The well-being offering was a party that many benefited from. When someone experienced the happy dance, when life was good, the well-being offering was the go-to ritual. You wouldn't be partying alone. By the way, I don't know if you knew this. Do you know what the Hebrew word is for this well-being offering? You didn't know that. Okay. Cheap humor. I just like that. I like that. The happy dance led to a party. Now, let me just ask all the vegans and the vegetarians just to relax for a second. I'm not instituting that we bring back this full-blown meat sweat ritual to our spiritual journey. But I have to say, as I was reading about this ritual this week and thinking about what they did back then and what surrounded this particular kind of offering, it got me thinking about something. It got me asking this question. What do we do with the excess in our lives? What do we do with the excess, what's left over? After we use all we need, what do we do when there's still way more than we're going to consume? I mean, when life continues to go well, and we experience more and more success, and more happy dances happen. And not just with the job, but in all parts of our lives, when a relationship turns and all of a sudden you go from having maybe a couple friends to this larger community, when business goes well and it's more than just that one deal, but now it's like it's happening all over the place. And what used to cause you to dance, now it's like, that's just normal. And less of those, and now it's bigger happy dances over bigger things. And all of a sudden, your life gets filled with success after success after success. What do you do with all that ends up building up that perhaps leads to this place in life where you got left over? What do you do with that left over? I've been thinking hard about this. The learning, the skills we acquire, the possessions, the experiences, the relationships, the networks. You know what's a little sobering? As I'm thinking about it for me, just how instinctive it can be to want to just stockpile the excess. Because it's nice having it right there. Huh? Especially if you've gone without, having that pile up right there. Or how easy it is to have different parts in your life, in my life, that end up, I don't even realize it, but they're resources all around me that just end up being wasted. Because I just didn't really think much about it. And it's not malicious. It's not intentional. I think it just happens subtly. It's a subtle tragedy. And so this morning, my thought is, with very little cost or effort on our part, the excess that is built up in our life in all kinds of different ways, I'm thinking it could actually dramatically change some lives around us, create some happy dances. And I want to show you what I mean. There's a story in the Bible of a widow named Ruth who's struggling. Literally, I mean, she's struggling to survive. She's a widow. And she's living with her mother-in-law. And back in ancient Israel, to be labeled a widow was probably economically the worst label you could ever be given. They didn't have social networks they have now. Welfare systems, different systems to be able to kind of provide a backstop for people who didn't have enough. When you're a widow, you literally were scrounging for your lives. Ruth was hanging out in this field where the harvesters were harvesting grain, and she would wait until all of them were pretty much done, and then she'd go in after, and she'd try to glean from anything they left behind. She's on land that isn't her own. She's a foreigner in this land, and literally she's like trespassing. But she's desperate to keep herself and her mother-in-law, Naomi, alive. So she's out there grabbing anything she can, put together a little meal, bring it home. So there's this wealthy guy, his name is Boaz, and he's watching. He's kind of in charge of operations. He's going, hey, who's the girl out there? A couple workers say, I'm not sure her name, but she's been hanging out for a little while. She's pretty quiet, but she's just, I think she's a widow or something. He went, really? Yeah, I get the sense that she's kind of hard up a little bit. Boaz takes it on himself to go over to Ruth and say, hey, Ruth, you know what? You look like you could use a hand. Tell you what, you thirsty? My workers, they have water back there. Help yourself when you need it, all right? You hungry? Tell you what. my workers eat at 5. If you're hungry, I want you to go and sit down and eat with the worker. He takes it one step further. He goes over to his harvesters and he says, hey guys, listen, when you're on the field, tell you what I want you to do. When you get to the edge of the field, don't like scrape it clean. Don't like vacuum that field, man. Leave some extra, all right? Leave a little extra for Ruth. Let me ask you something. What do you think it really cost Boaz to provide a little water, a little food, and a little extra on the field? I'm betting he didn't even notice it. But you don't want to know the impact on Ruth? Listen to what she said. She says, oh, sir, such grace, such kindness. I don't deserve this. You've touched my heart. You've treated me like one of your own, and I don't even belong here. I'm telling you, with one, these little pieces, he just said, you know what? Just take care of this, and off he went. Did he notice? No. Change your life. Have you ever thought about the excess in your life? Ever thought about the little things or the big things, the accumulation of stuff that you got piling up? Come back to that. I was 18 years old. I was living away from home. I moved away when I finished grade 11, came back to the city. So I was rooming and boarding with someone, with a family that took me in. And I was working a part-time job. I finished high school. I was going into university, and I got this T4. What does an 18-year-old know about a T4? Right? And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, I could tell it's from the company I was working for, but I didn't know what to... And so it was kind of like a scary document. I kind of put it on my desk and in my room, and I thought, I don't know what I'm supposed to even do. So I remember it sat there for a while, and I heard someone talking, and I brought up this T4 thing, and they said, oh yeah, you got to file your taxes. And I went, for whatever reason, in an 18-year-old's head, who's living away from home, file your taxes just seemed like something very scary, big, expensive. I didn't know. Like, and I'm just like, oh great, I got to pay taxes. I had all the, and I'm just like, oh no, I don't have any money. I don't know what I'm gonna do. And so I'm just like, So every time I'd walk into my room, I'd go, oh, I gotta do something with that. I don't know. Okay, you. So I'm over at my friend's one night, and something flashes, and we start talking, and I go, T4, do you ever get it? Do you ever get a T4? He says, yeah. Yeah, that you get that from the company when you're at work. You got to file your taxes. I said, I don't know what I do. Did you file your taxes? He says, oh, my dad doesn't. I said, oh. He says, why? I said, I don't know how to do that. He says, well, just a second. He says, Dad, Jeff doesn't know how to file. I'm like, he says, Jeff needs a hand with his tax. I said, oh, no, don't bother me. He's like, Jeff, you need a hand? I said, and now I'm thinking, oh, great, now he's going to tell me how much money I owe. And I'm just like, ah. He says, tell you what, bring your T4 over tomorrow night. We'll get her done up. Now, this is before tax soft or whatever, but we sat down. And so it took him an hour. And he's just doing it. I'm just looking at it just like, oh, wow. Boop, boop, boom. Package it up. He says, Jeff, pop this in the mail, and you're good. I said, what? How much do I pay? And he's like, no, you're good. And I looked at him, I said, Mr. Klein, thank you. He's like, you're welcome. And I'm like, no, thank you. It didn't matter how much or how I said thank you. Mr. Klein had no idea the impact that 1 hour had on me. I'm 45, and I remember that like it was yesterday. That 1 hour left such a deep mark on me. I went, oh, did he have any idea? No. How much did it cost him? It cost him 1 hour. Bless you. Can you think of things that people have done for you that have left an incredible mark on you? Maybe the way they shared with you of their access. And it may not have been like a massive thing for them, but for you, oh, it was big. Just start thinking about that for a second. Has someone ever loaned you their expertise? Maybe financial. Maybe you needed something around the house, some kind of home improvement. You're lost. Maybe you butchered a plumbing job and you're like desperate because you have waterfall. I don't know what your story. Maybe you had legal help at one point. Someone stepped in and said, let me give you some advice here. Someone ever shared a recipe with you or helped bail you out when you needed to do the turkey for the family for the first time? Someone ever given you something they no longer needed? Clothes, tools, furniture, dishes, cell phone when you dropped it in the toilet and you're screwed because you had so much owing. I hear these stories all the time. Someone had just a phone kicking around, but man, for the person who didn't have it and was looking at $300 who didn't have it, Yvette is our bookkeeper here at Friends Church. She volunteers for an organization that helps abused women who literally are fleeing from their homes. You know what she does? She helps them get all dressed up for job interviews. She counsels them on fashion. What does it take of her? Makes her feel good. But for them, who are literally leaving their homes with just the clothes that they have and no money, to be helped, to be able to find clothes and to be able to get dudded up and look great. Someone ever used their network of friends or business associates, perhaps to get you an interview, to get you a deal on something? Has someone ever helped you find a trustworthy employee, trustworthy trade? Like these kind of things, what does it cost? Really, what does that cost? But I'm telling you, when it's you that's in that need, and that person looks at you and says, hey, I got something over here, would that help? There was this woman who was living in this decrepit, broken-down home here in Calgary. The roof was so bad. The siding is, the stucco's peeling off. The yard was like, it was just like a jungle. Trees were breaking and falling down. I mean, and this little lady, her husband had passed away years ago. She's living in this place. And I mean, you drive up and you see all these infills everywhere. And here's this, you just, ooh. But there was a neighbor who looked at this whole mess. Said, gosh, this woman, I think, is in over her head. And so he begins to befriend her and says, hey, you know, I don't know how to ask, but do you need a hand, like, you in there? And she was really guarded, and you could tell she was maybe embarrassed. So this guy starts chatting with a friend of his who attends here. And the guy who attends here goes, oh, we do this. We do this. So he starts putting the word out. And before long, crews get organized. And they're out in the backyards, cleaning up, mowing down, bushwhacking, cutting down trees, cleaning up stuff, leveling out the joint. But pretty soon, they began looking up at the roof and going, you know, we got to get in and out of the house and clean up this nightmare, but man, that roof is in bad shape. We got to do something about that. So, one thing leads to another. Someone says, you know what? Why don't we call someone and just see what we can find out? So, a call gets made to a builder in town, home builder. The home builder says, well, geez, let me just make a few calls. Within the hour, a roofing company steps up and says, yeah, we'll help. You betcha. What's the address? So anyways, word gets back to me, whoa, we got a roofing company that's going to... So I phone the roofing company and say, hey, you know, like, we've got manpower. We've got this big community. We can help. We can scrape that roof, do whatever. He's like, no, trust me. My guys, my team will blow in and blow out quicker, and thanks, but no thanks. I said, well, we could pay for some supplies or something. He's like, trust me. I will make a few calls to some suppliers. They got stuff left over, that. He says, within a week, that roof. What did it cost the roofing company? Some man at labor. Mm-hmm. It costs a neighbor to notice. A neighbor to care enough, to give a crap enough, to be able to talk to someone and say, hey, like, is there, maybe we could get together some guys, and then for that person to make some calls, and then for that home builder to use some credibility and leverage that he has to get it out there. And before long, 1, 2, 3 later, I get this phone call from this woman, and she is like overwhelmed. Ah. She says she's driving down the street back and forth, just looking at her roof. She's going, I used to hate April, May, June when it started to rain. She goes, now, thank you. Who can I thank? How much did that cost? If you've ever been the one on the receiving end, you know the impact. You know how much that little action. This past year, I'm sitting over beer with a good friend of mine. We've known each other since I was in junior high. And we get together every now and then, sit and catch up, and we're doing that. She came in this day, and she's just bouncing. And I'm thinking, wow, you are upbeat today. You got a happy dance going on. And we're chatting, and she goes, Jeff, I am dying to tell you about something I did. I say, really? Do tell. She says, I was at this charity golf tournament way back, a few weeks ago, and I bought something. I went, really? She goes, crazy. I said, really? She says, you won't believe it. She's giving me all these prefaces. She says, the business is doing amazing. She says, we're doing well. We've had a banner year. But she says, I'm at this charity, and the charity I just so much believe in, she says, there was this auction item. She said, it's a golf trip. I bought a golf trip for a bunch of people. I went, whoa, you serious? She says, yeah, down to the Wilderness Club. It's a beautiful golf course down in the States. I said, what? She says, get this. She said, limo to the hangar at the airport, private jet, baby, flying there, golfing, fine wine, dinner. Jet home, limo to your... How? I went, holy crow. I said, that's crazy. She goes, I know. I said, I can only imagine what your clients are going to say when that phone call drops. She goes, really, eh? Like, can you imagine? I'm like, that is crazy. She's just vibrating. And she says, your name is on one of the seats in that jet. I said, you jerk. You're yanking my chain like that. I'm not your paying client. You're not taking me on that. He says, no, you're coming. I'm like, trip of a lifetime. Bucket list stuff. Now, here's the truth. Did she have to pay more money to get me on that plane? No,
but she bought the package. But she looked at what she had there and she said, you know what? There's a spot here. I'm making room for someone who would really appreciate this. You get where I'm going with this? I'm telling you, oh, this is a powerful little piece here. Been thinking a lot about this. These people that do this well, these people who look at what they have and utilize their excess so well, there's a few things about them. Number one, they cultivate compassion. There is a way when you get happy dance after happy dance after happy dance, you get success after success. Pretty soon, you know what I've noticed? We get insulated from some of the people who are not experiencing happy dances. And these people who are good at this, they get very good at being able to look past the insulation of their lives and look into the hurt, into the suffering, into the struggle of people that are sitting just outside the insulation. And they're willing to be able to sit in that awkwardness and go, oh, you need a hand. There's this guy who's a part of our community, wealthy guy. He pays close attention to different workers in his company, people that are hurting. He's continually looking for little ways. He says, hey, let's give them a loan. They're hurting. Hey, you know what? I'm going to give them a little bonus here. He's just constantly. And when he tells the story of, I'm going, wow, you are familiar with the ache and the hurt of people around you. You know that. And then what they do, they cultivate this compassion so they care. And then they invest the time to think hard about the different resources they have at their disposal. They're constantly aware of their inventories. Well, what do I got here? What do I got? And they're utilizing it, keeping it from getting old and stagnant and stale. They're looking at stuff they're not using. They're going, no, let's put that to work. There's someone out here that can use that. Who could use this? They invest deeply in the time to think about their resources, their excess. And here's another thing. They're not scared to invite someone to the party. They're not scared to say, hey, you know what? Could you use some furniture? You know, some people go, oh, I wouldn't want to embarrass them, make them think that, oh, maybe they don't. No. These people that are good at this, they don't care. They go, hey, would you be interested? They go, no, we're good. Okay, good. Just checking. I'll just keep looking. They're not scared to go out there and find where the needs are. They'll put it out there. That is key. They aren't scared to invite people to the party. Why? Because they get a thrill out of creating happy dances for others. Let me ask you, what excess do you got in your life? Maybe you came in this morning going, man, I'm hating the economy right now. I'm hating life right now. You got less than you had a year ago. But let me tell you something. Chances are, you and I, we got a little extra kicking around. It's somewhere. You got professional skills and trade skills. We got doctors and lawyers, accountants, real estate people, salespeople, fund developers, construction, electricians, plumbers. We got fashion people. We got designers. We got babysitters in the house. We got house cleaners. We got, maybe you got money. Money is good too. All right. Money works. Maybe you got relational skills. You've worked through some stuff. Maybe you've been through therapy. Perhaps you've been in a tough place and in the process, you've learned some stuff. You have books. You got therapists that you know. You got resources and people that can help. Maybe you have connections and networks of incredible people. Maybe you're a bargain hunter and know where to find the deals. What could be more amazing than a community of people here who are learning and growing and succeeding and experiencing all these happy dances in their own lives, but who are turning around and going, oh, you know what's even better than my happy dance? I'm bringing a few people with me this week. I'm going to pull up a couple chairs and they're going to eat at this barbecue. When's the last time you intentionally looked at some stuff that you got and you went, okay, what could I do with this? Who's going to get that? Would you be one to do that this week?
Would you be willing to do some inventory, what you got, and start asking a question, what could I do over the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, to utilize some of this excess kicking around that's going stale and turning rotten? Let's get it busy. Huh? Let's get it busy. It's time. We got to create some happy dances. Huh? Remember something. You will never know the impact that you have on someone when you spin that thing off. So utilize it. God, I pray that you won't allow me to sit on what I got, but that you will show me as I look hard at different ways that I can change an 18-year-old's life. That I can look into the life of a single mom. I can look for those stories around me who need a hand. And with little effort even, I could change their life. I pray that for me. I pray that for every person listening here in this room or on this podcast. God, turn us loose. In your name I pray. Amen. Create some happy dances, would you? Have a great week, you guys.